from high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade. As the guy with the deep voice just said, I come to you not from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan from the 15th floor, but I come to you from Nashville, Tennessee, the home of the Grand Ole Opry House. It's been around for 95 years, a few locations, but it's going to be all about the Patriot Awards tonight. It's going to be fantastic. Time to recognize those unsung heroes making a difference every day in America, hosted by Pete Hegseth. He wins every audition. They open it up. It's a cattle call situation. He always seems to win. Some say it's the cheekbones. Others say it's his body. Others say it's his poise on stage. That's the way Tyrus describes Pete Hegseth. And both of them are here shoulder to shoulder today. Bottom of the hour, Scott Mann. And before we get to these two wonderful Americans, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This is a place where I do a little bedwetting. When I'm sitting up at night, this is the thing I worry about. If Joe Manchin decides he wants to run on a third-party ticket, that could elect Donald Trump. And we need to be very clear about some of these third-party candidacies.
But does he even need Joe Manchin to win? That is Jim Messina from the Trump years, 2024. Attention, Democrats, more polls are in and your worst nightmare is coming to fruition. Trump is stronger and the 81-year-old incumbent would be knocked out by virtually anyone remaining in the GOP field.
Number two.
There is an AK-47. There are cartridges, ammo. There are grenades in here. Of course, uniformed. And all of that, this was hidden very conveniently, secretly, behind the MRI machine.
Nice. In the hospitals, just like the IDF said, now they've gotten proof. Israel at war. Hostage deal seems imminent. Gaza City penetration goes deeper. And as promised, Hamas evil practices using innocents as shields, hospitals as weapon depots, and tunnels as headquarters is revealed.
Number one.
As you know, I just concluded several hours of meetings with President Xi. And I believe they're some of the most constructive and productive discussions we've had. We've made some important progress, I believe.
Let's see. We'll find out. We're certainly pulling for him. Superpower thaw, perhaps. China comes to the city by the bay and shows a willingness to talk, a stubbornness on Taiwan, all while never taking blame for the spy balloon or the global pandemic that killed millions. We review the APEC summit. Now, it really hurts that Tyrus, you could not be covering the APEC summit. We could be tossing to you from Special Report.
That was a slight. Right. Was a second slight by him today.
Really?
There won't be three.
Right. There won't be three. I think you could bend that a little bit closer if you choose, Tyrus. Oh, okay. I would bend that a little closer to your face.
It's nice because last time I saw headsets like this, I was watching like old wrestling from the 70s. It's
really right. Cool. They're big headsets with a mic. This is with the size of the headsets I had calling UFC.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen some of that video?
Yes.
Yeah, they were enormous.
I remember. Black and white TV.
Yeah, that was good. Tyrus, first off, I'm not sure that you're going to be doing this on the 5. Yeah, I think you'll probably do this on the 5 tonight. You're going to be doing the 5.
Yep.
So far, was there any pressure on Biden? They lowered the bar so much. If he just didn't fall, he would look at a success, right?
Here's the thing. One thing we've learned with this administration, they're braggadocious. Whenever they have the slightest victory, we hear about it in grandiose style. What he basically stumbled through saying was basically China just basically came to check on their properties and their investments. That's really what they
did. To meet some business leaders.
Basically, just came home to see what's going on, how's my money, what's my stock looking like. And nothing productive was done because he would have said something. What he basically said was what they usually do. It was, some constructive things and this, that was good. Basically, China laid the law down. We kowtowed like we have been doing in every aspect of everything. It's also the same thing with the polls. You have to make a choice, Mr. President. You can't say I support Israel and not show up to one of the biggest
rallies
that we've seen in this country, probably since the Million Man March, and not show up since you had other places to be, and then at the same time say we're worried about Islamophobia when no one is doing that. So, I mean, it's just they need to pick a side, and that's why I think we're seeing the faltering folds. But no, China just came to check on their investments, and their investments are doing fine.
Curbing fentanyl production, Pete, military-to-military communications, and both the Chinese and the U.S. promised to crack down on carbon and work on renewables. That'll go well. as well, they said, we're not touching coal. We're going to continue burning coal. And they're going to start having communications in case something happens, goes wrong. Your thoughts?
My thoughts are we're fools.
We're fools. We look like fools.
Yep.
We
weak.
Do. I mean, we absolutely weak, and we look like fools. We show up with John Kerry, our climate czar, and that's priority number one. Beijing doesn't give a rip about that. They don't give a rip. So they will give fake concessions on this climate while they laugh at us. They do. They probably giggle when they go back to their after the main session. See, the Americans want fake promises based on the weather, and they're not pressing us on every other aspect that actually matters on China's ascendance and our dependence on them.
What's killing me is they're vulnerable. Their economy is not doing well. They're in the middle of deflation. People 18 to 28 can't get jobs. They are now sanctioning schools if their kids don't get employed. They're ripping out any private incentive to their economy that may have existed.
Tyrus knows this. If you've got a vulnerable opponent on the mat,
finish them.
Or you continue to drag them out, and that's what they're doing. Did you see the carpet we laid out for them? Like San Francisco, were we selling San Francisco to China? Is it a fix-it-upper? Clean up the house?
Power washing, baby.
I mean, there was red flags everywhere. Did we not forget this is where the pandemic came from? This is where 90% of the problems we have in the free world right now are coming from? And this is the, hey, guys, we're your friends, where it should have been office.
Right.
Meet me in the office. We got some stuff to discuss.
You come to me.
Yeah.
The thing is, too, I do think everybody on the Republican side, Trump up by 40 points, is going to be tougher on China, and they know it. And I asked Mike Pillsbury yesterday, I said, wouldn't China do something to make him look good with the reelection coming? He goes, communists don't think like that. They're going for
the kill.
But they did. And they're going to go for the
kill. I hate to disagree with you because I rarely do, but they did because they gave him concessions on the only thing they care about, the climate.
Right.
We're going to do this.
I don't think that helps him in the general.
He thinks it. They think it does. Because here's the thing about the Democrats. They outnumber us, I think, 3-1, basically, when you look at voting all around. And so their issues are what? Free, safe spaces, first world problems, and the climate. All the other stuff that we're concerned about, crime, education, good jobs, inflation, they don't spend that much time on it.
But here's the thing. They rigged the green game. They have the rare earth. They make the solar panels. So if they do, the world starts going, hey, I'm going green. China goes, great. You're going to be more in debt to me. I'll sell you everything. I'm hoarding the rare earth to make batteries.
And that they are doing. And they've also, on Tyrus's theme of investments, they've already invested in what they think is their next investment, which is Gavin Newsom.
Yep.
They already have that the future Democrat candidate in their mind, picked out in their pocket. He toured. He got the meeting. He brought him to California. He cleaned it up for him. He thinks they're great. We're not in a Cold War. Nothing to see here. It's called elite capture, and it's a real thing. And that Chinese believe that they've got another Democrat in their pocket.
Right. I want you to hear what Mike Pillsbury said yesterday. He'll probably, if Trump wins, he's going back because he evidently helped outline the China strategy for Trump. Cut 17.
It's a warning to the hawks inside the Biden administration not to go too far. It looks to me, Laura, like both sides are cooperating, the Chinese team and the Biden team, to work on the reelection of Joe Biden. I mean, they're framing this whole thing as Biden's move toward peace and dampening down tension. So it's a gamble, but perhaps the Chinese have been watching the polls and see that there's a very good chance of Mr. Trump returning. They don't want that. So the only other option is to endorse Biden. That's how I read the atmospherics of what we've been seeing the last few hours.
So the polls are pretty overwhelming. Fox News did a poll. The president's job performance, 40% approved. That's the highest I've seen. He is 63% of men disapprove of Joe Biden, 62% of voters under 45, 60% of Hispanic voters disapprove, 57% have college degrees. Black women, 60% like him, 41% don't like him. Head-to-head, Trump and Biden, Trump by 4, DeSantis and Biden, DeSantis by 5, Haley and Biden, Haley by 11. Bring us inside the White House, Tyrus. What are they thinking? Axelrod's turned on him. Tim Ryan has turned on him. He's got a legitimate opponent. New Hampshire's making a primary. They said, screw you. We're beating South Carolina to it. So the sitting president could lose New Hampshire.
He could, but again, they they always think in terms of we have numbers, and they're going to go back to the core rallying cry for the Democrats, which is always whenever they get – and a lot of times conservatives, they fall for it. The abortion argument always gets the base riled right. up, and we have those arguments, and then everyone forgets about the other things. You know, that's one of the – and that's what killed the red wave. And then with the same thing, we're like, they're not really concerned with the numbers now because they think they'll make, they'll paint enough picture of the big bad monster, which is Trump, and then they're going to continue because now you're starting to see – you won't see it on Twitter anymore, but you'll see on Facebook and Instagram, they'll start seeing the memes and the attacks, and he's Hitler. And they're going to keep saying he's Hitler. He's Hitler. And then you're going to start seeing people in the streets going, Hitler's coming. Hitler's coming. And so that's what they're really going to run on. They don't – they want to run on people not voting for Joe Biden because they didn't vote for Joe Biden last time. They voted to stop Trump, and that's the game plan. Right. So the polls mean nothing to them.
And the cherry on top of that, they want to say convicted felon,
yes.
Hitler clone,
yes.
and, oh, by the way, abortion. And that's all they're going to say because it's not about Joe Biden.
No.
It's not about – it's about all the people around him that want to maintain the access to power and the mm-hmm. control that they have to push their agenda.
Pete's hosting the Patriot Awards. We're going to talk about that when we get back. Tyrus got a brand-new book coming out next week called Enough Said. We're going to talk about that. I like Tyrus's body language, not loving yours. Your arms are crossed. Your legs are crossed.
His
Tyrus,
plate
you're
is
open.
Full. You
you're
should
open.
Know.
You're open.
His plate is full. All you know, right. I went to him. I said, what do you need? He said, I need to present. I'm in. Like we have his back. I promise no outfit changes. Only Pete gets the outfit change.
Right.
So, and last year it was two. So I'm assuming this year will be three. So, you know, he's got a lot. He's got this tailor, you know, his executive producer, his boss, his brain trust is his wife. So, you know, he's losing there. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a lot. I don't feel bad. My wife produces my stand-up shows.
Thank
which
you.
I'm filming my Fox Nation special tomorrow.
Right.
So it's a busy time. We're all nervous. But Pete's holding it together.
What he said.
Exactly. You're so much better off just nodding. But it's his radio, so the nods are not helping the show. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Dana Perino. Join me for my brand new podcast, Perino on Politics. As we analyze the 2024 election cycle, make sure you subscribe to this series on FoxNewsPodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts and leave me a rating and review.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure and mobilize the moderate, sensible, common sense middle. The middle's gone. There's not many of us centrists left. And if I can reinvigorate that, and I said, I will do everything that I possibly can. I'm totally, absolutely scared to death that Donald Trump would become president again. I think we will lose democracy as we know it.
You think he believes that, Pete Hegseth?
Who was that?
Joe Manchin.
That was Joe Manchin? I don't know. I mean, it's such a mantra of the left and Democrats. The whole idea of losing democracy, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Right.
It just means we hate Trump and Trump's going to destroy the
country. Tyrus, you put your head down.
I just put my head down. We're losing democracy.
Again.
We're the top five military in the world. USA, 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 America. Do you think if a president decided he's going to end democracy, our generals would be like, okay with it? Like, this is stupid.
It is.
But this is, it makes no sense. He didn't do it when he was in, didn't think about it. Even when he was convinced,
right.
after being having 4 years of basically impeachment and just nonstop right. fake news, everything trying to bring him down. He could have declared martial law. He could have tried. He could have tried to galvanize some generals. He could have done anything other than complain.
He walked with a Bible to a church after a riot in the White House, and yes. Millie lost his mind.
Right.
Yes.
Like, that gives you an instinct
gotcha.
Into yeah. our Pentagon
I have,
and how willing
they'd
be.
I am
be.
Done with Millie. I am oh, so good. He is
absolutely
done, more damage.
Done with Millie. Yeah.
So, Pete, what would you like to know about Tyrus's new book, Nuff Said?
I mean, I
it comes out
sure
next week.
It's absolutely phenomenal. I should cede my time to him to explain.
No, because we're going to talk about what's really important, which is the Patriot Awards.
You know,
this is all fodder. My book comes out next, just like when I gave that wonderful endorsement of your book,
right. Teddy and know. Booker T, which
yes.
is now out, and everyone's
yes.
talking about the segment you did. But with Nuff Said, it's less bio, more about how you.
Well, I take on basically, my first book was How My Brain Works and how I learned about the word I push so much, accountability.
Right.
And in this book, I put it to practice. So I'll take a lot of the things that are going on today. One, boots on the ground, give a personal experience, a story that relates to the thing, and then my opinion of it and a little common sense or whatever. And so it's basically what you see on Gutfeld of me, but instead of only getting me to talk for 4 minutes a night, you get the way my brain thinks, and we take a lot of stuff on. We talk a lot of stuff, everything from abortion to election to just what we're talking about right now with the hysteria of just saying things to get people to react with nothing to back it up. President Trump, there's nothing about him that says I'm non-democratic at all. Democracy, it's what he's fighting for.
Right.
He's fighting for the right to run for president.
He went through the courts on that. Everything, I mean, and it frustrated the heck out of him.
He shows up to court when he doesn't have to be there.
Right.
So that instead of planning his coup.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it makes no sense. It's ridiculous. It's about as dumb as saying third-party members hurt elections. No, they don't. You never had their votes to begin with. That's why they're voting for somebody else.
Gotcha.
Where if you have a two-party, you're forced to vote one way or the other. I think we should have more people running. I think we should have a four-party system. People have a choice. And then when President Trump wins in this situation, or if Joe Biden were to win, it's because he had the right voters. People weren't voting because they felt they had to.
Yeah, the polls are just amazing that Trump's got 91 charges, 4 indictments, and he's gaining in the polls while being charged on his civil charges that's supposed to hurt his reputation. Everything the American people see right through it. Pete, tonight, Trump will be watching. That's my transition, I think.
Not
Patriot
bad.
Awards, that's what I'm going to go with.
Not
Patriot
bad.
Awards tonight. It goes on. How long is it? When can we see it? How can we see it?
Fox Nation. 7 p.m. local, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. It is, when you see it behind the scenes, you realize what a top-notch show it is. I mean, this is, forget about the Oscars and all that.
Right?
I mean, this is as well-produced and put together, but it's all about the basics. And you know what? I'm going to love on my man here for a second, because what was it, 2-3 months ago, he reached out and said, hey, when am I coming to the Patriot Awards? I mean, because it's a reflection.
I cornered him. I'll be honest with you.
He did.
Yeah.
But he was coming anyway. So it was an exclamation. He said, I love this event. I want to be there with Patriots. I want to honor these heroes. And that's the ethos of Fox, too, of Tyrus, of you, of me, of everybody. Like, we're here for the audience.
Right.
And we're here for the people getting the awards. And it's a reminder for us of why we're in this business to begin with, which is the country and saving the country.
We have a new award, the Stephen Siller Award, right?
Yes. So. You guys are giving out the Stephen Siller Award. It's a phenomenal local connection. We can't really talk about what it is right now. But it's going to bring the house down at the end.
So it's interesting. With all the people, you're famous for so many reasons. Now you're doing stand-up. You're a wrestler for years. You're a football player. Now you're a personality. When you travel around, do you notice that when you're in New York and Los Angeles, they're indifferent when you travel around, how different people treat you and Fox?
Well, the thing is, though, I get love wherever I go, probably because I'm a foot taller than everybody else.
Right.
But and I get coins. The other day, I was like, I went to pick up my bag to leave, because I was like, why is my bag so heavy? And I looked and I forgot how many coins I've gotten from all over the country or whatever. The thing is that there's this misconception that you have to be from a certain place or somewhere, and it's not. People from all across. I go to California, my shows sell out. Doesn't matter where I go, because our people are there. The message is what they like. And you know, to segue back real quick to tonight, I get an awesome chance. I get to honor a police officer tonight. And in my book, as I tie them together, I have an open letter to the police of this country.
Enough said.
Pre-order now. But tonight, it's a great honor, like being able to honor the police because we...
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Mr. President, after today, would you still refer to President Xi as a dictator? This is a term that you used earlier this year.
Well, look, he is.
Yep, and just like that, his Secretary of State and his staff got upset. President Biden keeps saying things sometimes that he's right. He is a dictator. He's a communist dictator. He consolidated power. I think he had his predecessor taken out in the middle with every camera on him in front of everyone, and the guy's disappeared, hasn't been seen since. No one's going to be reelected or elected in China. He is it. He is a dictator, a communist dictator, but no one wants to be called that. China is outraged by that, and our Secretary of State's horrified by that. With me right now to talk about this and hopefully a little bit more. He's in a talkative mood. I know. I talked to him this morning on Fox and Friends, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann. He conducted a coordinated task force Pineapple, author of the book Operation Pineapple Express, the incredible story of a group of Americans who undertook one last mission in honor of promise to Afghanistan. He's also doing a one-man play with some very important people. And he's going to talk more about that now. Scott, first off, when you look at things in the big picture from a policy perspective, he is a dictator, isn't he? Isn't he the definition of a dictator?
I mean, absolutely. It's a communist country.
Just say it.
It's a totalitarian regime. Their behavior indicates it. And honestly, I tell you, in the veteran community, looking at just the optics of that guy's visit to San Francisco, it looked more like mainland China than it did the United States of America. And I understand that, you know, diplomacy and public relations and things like that. But my goodness, that was not a good optic for the country.
So you're saying that if President Biden went to China, they wouldn't have put their version of Broadway and put American flags up and down the street?
I mean,
Chinese flags?
It was a straight up performance. I mean, it had no underpinning of, you know, just like national pride, national integrity, national autonomy. None of that, and it just smacked of like some kind of, you know, performance, diluted performance. It was really tough to watch.
It was, and now they meet and they basically say, when it comes to Taiwan, back off. We're taking it anyway. I mean, this is through an interpreter. They're gonna have military contacts. That's always good, but here they're talking about Taiwan, and when you talk about Taiwan, Joe Biden has said over and over again, if you attack Taiwan, we will get involved. Here's the president of China talking about that. Cut 9.
The China-U.S. relationship, which is the most important bilateral relationship in the world, should be perceived and envisioned in a broad context of the accelerating global transformations unseen in a century. It should develop in a way that benefits our two peoples and fulfills our responsibility for human progress.
Right. So they can be different. We're going to be able to compete. We'll see what happens coming out of this. But doesn't it bother you as a military person that it is our destroyers that are being cut off? It is our B-52 bombers that they got within 10 feet of just a few weeks ago. It was our country that was infiltrated by a spy balloon full of high-tech equipment. And yet we're the ones who keep asking for this meeting.
Yeah, it's I've always believed that if you want to know what your opponent is up to, just pay attention and they'll tell you. I mean, they're telling us exactly what they're up to. Their actions indicate it as well. And the fact that we are so tone deaf to this, it's hard to watch. Like, it really is. And you can see, and China plays the long game. Like, you know, when you look at different antagonists, China plays the long game and they know how to play the long game and they're extremely patient. And when they said this will happen invariably, inevitably it will happen.
Colonel, I remember for the longest time, America, you strategized, the last thing we wanted is urban warfare. Mm. It's dangerous. We want to avoid it. Guess where we were in Iraq? Urban warfare, block by block. You guys were cordoning off entire cities, putting in IDs, the citizens, to try to gut the terrorists. The last thing the Israelis wanted to do was to go into Gaza block by block. That's very consistent. They did not have a choice.
Right.
From what you see of this operation, what they let us see through the helmet cams, how do you characterize it so far? You know, they bombed for 2 weeks, and they've been on the ground for 2 weeks.
There's a couple of things about the Israeli military that I've always kind of been in awe of. One is I believe they are the fastest collective learning organization on the planet. They learn fast, and they crystallize that learning, and they distribute that learning in record time.
Is that leadership?
That's definitely leadership, and it's a culture. It's a culture of understanding that if you don't learn fast when you're surrounded on all sides, you're not gonna survive. So they're a fast learning organization. And then the other thing that strikes me, Brian, about what they're doing is the surgical lethality by which they're executing this mission. Extremely surgical, extremely precise, excellent intelligence, and then the fact that they're showing in real time, transparently, what's actually happening. They're holding a mirror up to Hamas. in real time with distributed cameras, and they're showing it to the world. That is unprecedented. I mean, to see that kind of narrative warfare happening at the same time you're fighting block by block, and the discipline that that takes to do that from strategic to tactical, it's super impressive to
me. I want you to hear, so know what they're doing now is, I saw it on other channels too, they're saying, it's a little dangerous, but come with me on a mission. Because they're losing the PR war and to the rest of the world. And they say, we want you to show you why we're bombing in and around neighborhoods. This is where they're located. So here is Jonathan Caracas. He is the IDF spokesperson. And here he is walking through a hospital. Cut 21.
We're now, as you can see, in an MRI room. I don't know when this was used the last time. But it is definitely an MRI machine. And if you follow me behind the MRI machine, I'll show you what our troops exposed just minutes ago. In military terms, this is a grab bag, grab and go of a Hamas combatant. And if you zoom in and we get some light over here, what you'll be able to see is military equipment. There is an AK-47. There are cartridges, ammo. There are grenades in here. Of course, uniform. And all of that, this was hidden very conveniently, secretly, behind the MRI machine.
Convincing. I watched the video. You've seen the video. So this is what they have to do now. They got to bring a spokesperson with them on missions.
It's what they're going to have to continue to do. And you and I talked about this off camera, but they're going to have to continue to do this because this is a narrative war that they are waging. And a large chunk of the world have these preconceived false narratives about what's actually going on. Look, when you have a grab bag behind an MRI machine, that is a violation of law of land warfare. That hospital legitimately becomes a target at that point because you are using that as a launch pad. And so these guys are violating law of land warfare at every turn, Brian, and they're going to have to document it. They're going to have to show it in real time. I hope that they show that horrible film that they showed the press of October 7th. I think that thing needs to be mainstreamed into every university in the United States, because
children with their hands cut off.
I mean, what else are you going to do? Because the narratives that are out there right now are actually justifying this kind of anti-Semitic, anti-human behavior, and it's got to be stopped.
So this is going to go on for a while, but does it bother you that the enemy wants you there? Like, Hamas knew.
Yeah.
They're coming into Gaza.
Right.
And Israel says, yeah, you're right, we're coming in. But does it bother you that they want this?
That's why I talk about this notion of the narrative. Look, at some point, the local population is really who you want to address here. I mean, in other words, like in Afghanistan, you want a local population that is inhospitable to the Taliban. In Gaza, you want a local population that is inhospitable to Hamas and Hezbollah. You want the folks to want their own form of government. And that's going to be a tough slog. But ultimately, that's the only way you win this thing. Otherwise, you just keep going back in there doing house-to-house fighting. And that is diminishing returns. Over
you know, immediately, time. The Wall Street Journal came out with a story and said they were meeting biweekly in Beirut with Hezbollah and the Quds Force officers, as well as Hamas. And then we find out a week later that they were at 500 training in Iran. The one thing the administration said, we don't think so, because we picked up communication says they were surprised by this attack. Yeah. And we have nobody in Lebanon that would confirm this. Now, why do you think the administration is reluctant to believe or pursue the same roads that journalists are pursuing? Why are they reluctant to get those answers?
Well, I mean, I'm not super steeped in policy, but it doesn't take a genius to look at the fact that they've kind of made their bed with a pre-existing policy with Iran that doesn't look very good now if you now address them as a state sponsor of terror and, frankly, the external supporter of Iran, you know. But you're bringing up points that are absolutely spot on, and that's the beauty of surrogate warfare, is you put your surrogates into play. And then you just have plausible deniability when it goes bad. And that's what Iran's doing here. And that's very obvious. And the fact that we would even make those kinds of overt statements with the implicit and explicit involvement that Iran's had is inexcusable.
At the very least, these are organizations that are extremely reputable organizations. So, yeah, they get stuff wrong. Everybody gets stuff wrong. But this is pretty consistent. They've been going down this way. And I think to myself right away, how did you know so quick that this was going on?
Yeah.
And we did have reporters. There were reporters, AP reporters, and CNN reporters. They said they were freelance who were with Hamas during the incursion, which is blown away. When you heard about it, you've read a lot about it. Do you think that was well rehearsed?
I do. I mean, there's no way that you could execute this kind of multi-echelon layered offensive without state sponsorship. You know, surrogates like Hezbollah and Hamas conducting it, okay, but there had to be some kind of state sponsorship of this for an attack of that scale. I mean, look at the weapon systems that are in those tunnels. I mean, they are pristine. The packing grease still on those things. Like, you know, there's definitely some kind of state sponsorship, and it wouldn't surprise me the more that we unpack this, because I'm already hearing reporting of this from our context that Afghanistan, the terror safe haven there, was feeding and fueling this to some degree.
You're hearing this?
Absolutely.
And what about the weapons that we left?
Absolutely. We were hearing this past summer from Massoud's National Resistance Front that weapons were making their way into the black market in the Levant from Afghanistan. We were hearing that there were a whole range of fighters training in Afghanistan at these camps. And it would not surprise me at all if, as this thing continues to unfold, that you see it emanating ultimately, at least, or some of it originating from Afghanistan.
So tell me about your one-man play.
So it's actually a six-person show. It started as a one-person show. It's called Last Out, Elegy of a Green Beret. And I tell people, if you want to know why Pineapple Express happened, come see this play, because it tells the story of the long Afghanistan war, how it affected a military family, what they went through, and it's all veterans and all military families in the cast. Only two professional actors. I play the lead role along with my son and several other veterans, and we've traveled the country. Gary Sinise sponsored it for a year, and now we're bringing it out on our own, taking it around the country.
Who gave you acting class?
I started studying when I was 50 years old, like the ultimate midlife crisis. I snuck up to New York twice a month to study under Larry Moss and Carl Bury, so my SF buddies didn't find out I was doing it. And then we rolled it out as a surprise on Veterans Day 2018, and I've been acting ever since.
Do you like it?
I love it. It's for me, it's healing with all of the PTS and survivor's guilt. It's allowed me to take the trauma out on the stage and share that story with Gold Star families and combat wounded and really heal right there in real time in front of them.
What does an acting teacher teach somebody who lived it?
Well, because for veterans, we're taught to bottle it up and put armor over it so that we can stay in the fight. And, you know, like when you get on a stage, you have to take all that off, and you have to tell the story of trauma, suicidal ideation, losing your friends. You have to take all that off, and you have to just be present for the audience and let them see what that world's like. And so it's terrifying. It actually goes against everything that we're taught to do as veterans and first responders. But I actually think that's how we heal. My nonprofit, that's what we focus on, is storytelling to heal.
So a lot of people say acting is therapeutic.
It is therapeutic. It has been for me. I mean, everything in the play is true.
Military, or even if you're not in the military.
100%. And like, that's what we do, is we actually teach storytelling to veterans and first responders so that they can go through that and act. Because what happens is when you tell a story, you put it out there, you're telling it in the service of someone else, and you actually start to heal yourself.
Wow, so interesting. But also you have to create – but you're still you. We're talking to Scott Mann here. Scott, do you think that when this is done and the series is done, could you see auditioning for parts that aren't within your personality?
No.
Or you just did it for the stage show?
I did it. I do it strictly. I mean, I'm going to do a one-man show, hopefully, around Pineapple as well. I do love performing like that, but I mostly love performing the stuff I write.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Understood. Well, that could be stand-up. You know, that could be it. Okay.
See what happens.
I know you're very serious to do stand-up. I think you've seen too much hard stuff. Scott, it's always great. If we want to find out more about the plays.
Yeah. If you go to lastoutplay.com or scottmann.com, we've got everything up there. Our final performance is in Tampa, December 6th and 7th, but hopefully bringing it to New York. We got some surprises there in 24.
Awesome. Lieutenant Colonel Scott Mann, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
October 16th, 1901. This new president, Teddy Roosevelt, is just getting used to the reins of power after the assassination of William McKinley. So he's here at the White House, and he gets word that Booker T. Washington, his good friend, is in town. So he does what everyone would do, invites him over for dinner with his family. And they'd met until 11 o'clock at night. It seemed like the right thing to do. After all, what's the big deal? A white president and his family meeting with a black leader? Well, that's now. 120 years ago, they weren't ready to accept it.
It's the first time in the history of the country that a black man was invited to dine with the President of the United States. We had some hesitation about doing it because Booker T's way of operating is under the radar.
Upon hearing the president's invitation, Washington wrote this letter with the following reply.
My dear Mr. President, I shall be very glad to accept your invitation for dinner this evening at 7:30. Yours very truly, Booker T. Washington.
And that is a little of the special that's on Fox Nation about, based on my book, Teddy and Booker T, Two American Icons, Blaze the Path to Racial Equality. Thanks for making it a top 10 book on the New York Times list this week. Fantastic. I'm going to be signing. I'm at the Patriot Awards right now in Nashville, going to Brentwood, not too far away, 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock tomorrow. So go make reservations if you can at Barnes & Noble there. And then on the 18th in Chattanooga, Tennessee, on Hamilton Place. So that'll be at noon. On the 18th as well. So after Chattanooga, I'm going to be going to Madison, Alabama at 6 p.m. So I've never been to Madison, but I love Alabama. I look forward to seeing all of you there. And then the next day, staying in Alabama, going to Montgomery on the 19th. And that's right off the East Chase Parkway. You'll see me in Bayshore, Long Island at Barnes & Noble. That'll be on Long Island, I mentioned. That'll be the Friday after Thanksgiving. All right, Saturday after Thanksgiving. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We have a lot of things we're covering. Number one, the Patriot Awards. You have to watch tonight. If you want to find out who really stood out this year and did things selflessly and heroically, this is the show to do it. Also, we're following it through stories. The APEC Summit. There's 21 other leaders, 21 leaders getting together out in San Francisco. They're trying to make some progress. And also, the big story was the meeting yesterday with our president and the president of China. You factor in also that while this is happening, right after it's happening, there was an additional event. But the president of China left and hosted a dinner with American businessmen and women. If you had $2,000, you got in. If you had $40,000, you sat at his table. And as we've been going over here, Mike Gallagher leading the Chinese Select Committee on Intelligence, bipartisan, they are a dangerous nation, and we have to be decoupling. And for these business owners to say, ah, forget politics, let's do a deal, just think it's terrible. Brian Kilmeade Show at the Grand Ole Opry House in Nashville, Tennessee. Keep it here.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, normally I'm happy to tell you I'm coming to you from Midtown Manhattan. But now I'm telling you I'm coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, as the guy with the deep voice just said. Patriot Awards, a time to salute average everyday Americans doing extraordinary things and not doing it to be famous, but they're going to be recognized tonight. And we'll be here. I hope you get Fox Nation anyway, but you can watch the streaming device. Also, I have What Made America Great at 56 of those episodes. I think the best one is the last one I just did, and it's Teddy and Booker T, How Two American Icons Blaze the Path to Racial Equality. It's eventually going to air on the channel, but right now it's on Fox Nation. This hour, we got some great guests lined up. We got Patrick Murphy, who's standing right here. He was the 32nd Undersecretary of the Army, Iraq War vet, former congressman from PA. John Rich, this is his home game, beautiful house, beautiful restaurant, beautiful bar here in Nashville. And then Mark Thiessen next hour. But right now, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This is a place where I do a little bedwetting. When I'm sitting up at night, this is the thing I worry about. If Joe Manchin decides he wants to run on a third-party ticket, that could elect Donald Trump. And we need to be very clear about some of these third-party candidacies.
Yeah, and a lot of people, believe it or not, Jim Messina, are happy about that. 2024, attention Democrats, more polls are in, and your worst nightmare coming to fruition. Trump is stronger than the 81-year-old incumbent, and he would be knocked out with Joe Biden by virtually anyone on in the GOP field.
Number two.
There is an AK-47. There are cartridges, ammo. There are grenades in here. Of course, uniforms. And all of that, this was hidden very conveniently, secretly, behind the MRI machine.
And that is Jonathan Konarakis. He is the IDF spokesperson at Al Shiva Hospital in Gaza City. Israel at war. Hostage deal seems imminent. Keep your fingers crossed. Gaza City penetration goes deeper. And as promised, Hamas evil practices of using innocents as shields, hospitals as weapons, depots and tunnels as headquarters is revealed.
Number one.
As you know, I just concluded several hours of meetings with President Xi. And I believe there are some of the most constructive and productive discussions we've had. We've made some important progress, I believe.
We'll see. Superpower thaw, perhaps. China comes to the city by the bay and shows a willingness to talk. The stubbornness on Taiwan, all while never taking blame for the spy balloon or the global pandemic that killed millions, all at the APEC summit. With me right now is a man that knows all about diplomacy as well as fighting for our country. He is Patrick Murphy. Congressman, welcome back.
Brian, thanks for having me back. And it's great to be here at the Patriot War. It's my first time ever.
Yeah, you'll love it. It's right up your alley. Of course, you never stop serving the country. But we're looking at the flat screens now, and we're looking at protesters in Boston. And they're calling for a ceasefire, I guess, in Gaza and blocking the street. We saw the raid on the DNC headquarters last night in D.C., the assault of six cops. Congressman, this is dividing the Democratic Party and dividing America. It shouldn't. This is the easiest ever. Defend your ally after a brutal attack.
Yeah, well, I'd also say there was the largest pro-Israel rally ever in American history in Washington. I was down
peaceful.
There 2 minutes ago. Right, a peaceful one, exactly, a peaceful one. And so, yeah, this is disheartening. But Brian, I've talked to you about this. They've been sowing the seeds of anti-Semitic rhetoric in college campuses across America that people just don't understand what's going on, that Israel shares our values, that Israel is a democracy in the middle of the Middle East where you have dictatorships.
They don't know. Do you think these people know about the Palestinian situation?
No.
Do you know the history to the region? Do they understand what happened October 7th, what life was like October 6th? Where were they October? This seems to be orchestrated. You believe the seeds were sown in curriculum. I actually think a lot of these people are getting paid.
Yeah, I was got 4,000 folks, including John Huntsman, including Mark Rowan, Josh Harris. 4,000 of us wrote a letter before October 7th at the University of Pennsylvania. I teach at the Wharton School of Business. We had the lead singer of Pink Floyd there, who's a known anti-Semite, who has said he thinks October 7th. Roger Waters. He thinks October 7th is still manufactured. He thinks that Israel is like Nazi Germany. It is, but to invite people who have hate in their heart to college campuses is wrong. And we got to make sure that, and again, I believe in academic freedom and the freedom of speech, but this is what you see on these rallies right here. These are misinformed folks that don't understand the world, that don't understand what's going on. Some of them, Brian, I will try to give the benefit of doubt. I always try to be fair and balanced. Some of them might just say, hey, they see suffering going on in Gaza, and let's put it, and again, those of us who've seen war, it hurts our heart but I also hurts my heart the fact that there's 200 hostages still that we're trying to get released from the terrorist group.
So think about this. For years, Syrian President Assad was dropping barrel bombs on innocent people. We could saw all the video.
Yeah.
Then he gassed them.
Yeah.
Where were the protests around the Syrian embassy?
Right.
Where were the protests at the UN? Then you go, okay, enemy of our country, he's an evil person. We agree. We had to take action there. We still have troops there. Because we got 900 troops there because of that. I keep going back to where does this come from? How do you motivate students to give up so much for Palestinians when they probably have never, in many cases, have never even met a Palestinian, don't understand who the bad guys are in this region? People want a homeland? Okay, have you? Tell me about Oslo. Tell me about the last time you heard about Yasser Arafat. Tell me about Hamas winning the election in the region, and you cannot go to talks with Hamas. And they don't want to talk. Right. Do you think they want to sit down at a table at Camp David?
No. And Hamas leaders are not even in Palestine. They're overseas. Qatar. They're in Qatar and elsewhere. And that's why when I say there's so many seeds here in America, and that's what we're seeing here. But there are also so many seeds in their own homeland. And it's not just Palestine. It's Jordan isn't great, some other ones, where they're teaching their kids that Israel doesn't have a right to exist, that Israel isn't really human beings. And again, that's not what we need. We need our friends in that region of the world to do what's right and to make sure that it's the next generation understands that we're all human beings. We all want the same things. We all believe in God. Our beliefs on what God
not
is might
Hamas,
be a difference.
They got a different. They got a different set of, different set of beliefs.
No. They're a terrorist organization. No.
Right.
They're different.
And people have pointed out to me that Yasser Arafat was a Christian, so he might have been impossible to deal with. And he said, if I ever cut a deal, I'll be assassinated the next day. Those were the good old days.
Right.
Those were the good old days. Where you go, you're not negotiating good faith. These people just want to kill you, and they abuse the Palestinian people, perhaps. I don't know. I'm only going by second and third hand. I want to talk to you about the Democratic Party and how they stand on this. You watch the president's numbers go down in with Tlaib's crew, with Muslim Americans, because he's standing up for Israel. They did not appear at the pro-Israeli rally, not the Secretary of State, not a vice president, not even not a president. Where did the Democratic Party stand on this? Because it seems to be a lot of members of the squad and Congressman John Bowman, they are for ceasefire.
Listen, I think you're seeing members of the squad get primaried, and now they're going to
You want a primary?
Well, I think what you're seeing is Jeffries and these folks who are saying, hey, you made your bed. Now you got to sleep in it. And so they're going to the DCCC saying, hey, Akeem Jeffries, help us out here. And he's like, hey. You got your primary fights. We'll support you in the general election if that's the case, if need be. So what you're seeing is the folks are coming home to roost. And I'll tell you.
What about Barack Obama's nobody's hands are clean here? Did that bother you?
No, it didn't bother me at all. And I think that's what we need to do as far as when you take a step forward and say, hey, let's talk. Let's figure out a way forward. In the meantime,
my hands are dirty here.
The reason why I took it, why I was offended, honestly, Brian, I think he's a good. He was raised by a World War II veteran, his grandfather, who served in Patton's Army. I think he's self-reflective. Like, look at what's going on. This is years in the making, and he's like self-reflecting, saying, "Frankly, I wish we could have done more."
He didn't say that. That's what you hope he said. He could have said, "I could have done more," but how would he do more when Hamas won? You could even go back to Condoleezza Rice. She was Secretary of State. She says, "Have elections. Start getting some democracy here. They have elections, Hamas wins, and then the Palestinian Authority gets blown out of Gaza." They both things they didn't think was going to happen.
Right.
So he could say that and say, listen, we made a bad decision back in 2005. I don't know. But to say everyone's hands are dirty here, right, when they massacred children, the people they massacred were the people who were sympathetic towards Gazans, Palestinians, that spend their time volunteering over there. They got their intelligence, and then they butchered them.
Yeah. No, and I don't think he means on October 7th, Brian. He doesn't mean October 7th. I think he means that in the making up to it, that Netanyahu and some others weren't as great and try to meet them or try to do what's necessary to prevent this. And by the way, their hands aren't clean in that there was a massive intelligence failure on the IDF's part. And I'm not, again,
absolutely,
I'm not trying to kick them when they're down, brother. So I'm not trying to. But
they got to figure it out now.
Right.
Because what else are they missing?
Well, listen, I think his days are numbered, if you ask me.
Yeah, the parliamentary system, you could do that, but it's a bad time to oust him. I think he's got military experience. He understands the West. But Fox News poll comes out. Record high disapproval for President Biden, 63% for men, 62% under 45, 60% disapprove of Hispanics, 57% with college degrees, 41% of black voters disapprove of President Biden. Now, I would say I think you know that the Fox News polls don't skew left or right.
No.
The other thing is, this is reflective of what CNN came out with and what CNN came out with. Fox News poll, President Biden actually has the highest performance, 40% approval. It's low, but it's higher than he usually gets. Head-to-head with Trump, he loses by 4. Head-to-head with DeSantis, loses by 5. Head-to-head with DeSantis, with Nikki Haley, loses by 11. Is this why Tim Ryan, is this why David Axelrod, is this why Van Jones is basically saying, Joe, you got to step aside?
I think that's a big reason why. And I do think that you're seeing folks that are saying, hey, this is unrecoverable. I would say, though, Brian, historically, as you know, these are the same numbers, some a little bit better, some a little bit worse, that where Barack Obama was against Mitt Romney in his reelection. And Biden's numbers are actually a little bit better on the economy than where Obama was. And I would say this, too, that Mitt Romney, he didn't have, you talk about a floor and a ceiling. Mitt Romney, Trump's floor is higher because there's people, the 40% of people were ready to run through a wall for him. He's a fighter, and we all know that. But the ceiling is much shorter compared to where Romney is. And I think that when you look at when it's Biden versus Trump, which it's going to be, if it's Nikki Haley, it's a different case, but it's going to be Biden versus Trump rematch. And I do think President Trump, former President Trump, is a flawed candidate. And I'm not just talking about the four indictments and the four court cases.
But do you know the main difference between Obama and Biden?
Yeah, I
think. Is it Obama and Clinton? I think W, too. Bill Clinton, obviously. Not Hillary. But Hillary still, you know, was healthy. He's not going to get younger, and that's what Axelrod's point was. Yeah, you could have bad numbers, but I'm going to give you a strategy. I'm going to go out and do 5-6 events a day. Trump will do 5 events a day. His own staff is worried about their president giving a speech or doing an interview. He can't win it. Trump has to lose it. And that's what's got the experts on the left unnerved.
Right. And historically, Democrats usually went to bed at this point in the presidential
race. You
think so? Yeah.
You're not shocked by these polls?
I was in Baghdad, Iraq, getting mortared at night almost every night. And so, like, you kind of know when the mortars are coming and you know how
No, I'm usually as an analyst.
But I'm saying, though, in that, I think people have counted out Joe Biden from day one. They counted him out in the primary, the Democratic primary 4 years ago. They're counting out now. And I do think the guy is a workhorse, not a show horse. He's produced.
He's a workhorse?
He is, Brian.
Oh, my God. He takes three-day weekends. He doesn't do any interviews. Are you kidding me?
He's not a show horse. He's not, but he is. Like, he works it. And he's passed the bipartisan infrastructure bill, the CHIPS Act. I mean, again, it's what they – Brian, I mean,
he's not 14 a workhorse.
Million jobs.
He's not a workhorse. We're coming off the pandemic. I'm just saying that right now the American people have soured on him on almost every level. And you're seeing now in three major polls. But I'm going to bring up Dean Phillips. Evidently, according to the Washington Post, Dean Phillips cannot get President Biden on the phone. He wanted to say, listen, I'm going to run. He goes, why? He goes, the queer thing is he's not doing a Dennis Kucinich. He actually wants to win. So he goes, I like President Biden, but he thinks he's too old. He went out, and he is going out there, and he's pounding New Hampshire and South Carolina. And in New Hampshire just said, we're going first before South Carolina.
January 3rd,
so to play this out. The New Hampshire primary comes up. Joe Biden's not on the ballot. Dean Phillips walks away with those electoral points. He goes to South Carolina, a nimble guy, self-made billionaire. I'm not going to sell him, but I'm going to tell you he can speak.
Yeah.
You know, he can talk. He can debate. He has confidence. He's got money. This is worrisome to the White House, or am I overstating it?
I think you're most overstating it. I agree with your first sentence.
He wants to win.
He wants to win. He's probably going to win New Hampshire because, they jumped up, and Biden's not going to compete there. But I think Biden smokes him everywhere else: South Carolina, Iowa, Nevada, Super Tuesday. Like it's not even going to be close. It's like not even close. I think Robert Kennedy would have done a better job than Dean Phillips in a primary.
But he wouldn't even acknowledge him.
Yeah, well, I think that was his middle finger to him, to be honest with you, Brian. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to your radio show, but I think that was the president's way of saying, like, I'm not going to take my time. I know you're going against me, and I'm not going to make this easy for you.
With RFK.
Well, I meant for Dean.
Oh, for Dean.
I think RFK, yeah. RFK is going to obviously run as independent, and I think that's going to be – I think those numbers are accurate. I think he takes more votes away from former President Trump, actually, now.
Oh, RFK.
Yeah.
Three-way race in the Fox poll.
Yeah, because the vaccine voters and the anti-vaccine voters, et cetera, yeah.
Right. But right now in the three-way race, it just came out. He gets 15% of the vote, and Trump wins in the last. But there's also a whole bunch. There's Jill Stein. There's possibly Joe Manchin. There's RFK. And there could be Cornel West. They could be carving the whole thing. 1%, 1%, 1% could be a difference.
Yeah. And this could be nip and tuck, man. We're going to be talking about this for the next 12 months, brother.
All right.
So,
Congressman Patrick Murphy, back to University of Pennsylvania for you.
Yeah.
And I look forward to seeing you here in the Patriot Awards.
Absolutely.
All right.
It's going to be a great night.
Brian Kilmeade, Nashville. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Brian Kilmeade coming to you from the Grand Ole Opry House. This has been around for 95 years. A few locations. like Madison Square Garden in New York City. It's still MSG, but it was moving all around Manhattan. So this place is great. It's historic. It's fantastic to be here. Patriot Awards tonight. But one thing stuck out with me with Hunter Biden. Just familiar with a lot of people around me that have been addicted to different things, and I don't judge them, but I do notice. They always blame, and there's always somebody to blame. And I'm seeing it again with Hunter Biden, who claims to be in recovery, and for his sake, I hope so. But I don't like the behavior again. Do you know this guy's threatening to sue Tony Bobulinski? Do you know that this guy had a book tour out after he got away with that laptop not being his, according to 51 Intel experts? Then he writes a book about his life, bringing all these questions up again, which we still use as answers because they're so inadequate. Do you know what he's doing now? He wants to subpoena President Trump, and he wants to subpoena Bill Barr for relentlessly going after him, his tax cases, and his laptop. This guy also wants to sue the laptop owner. He never admitted that was his laptop, but the guy on the laptop repair shop, he wants to sue him. So instead of taking accountability and responsibility for anything and everything, he's suing the exact people who are pursuing the truth, opening himself up to discovery. Do you think the president wants more scrutiny on Trump and Hunter? Do you know how much President Trump loves this? Can anybody say no to this kid? Brian Kilmeade Show, back in a moment.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. With me right now is country music legend. I don't say legend, makes you sound old. I would think a superstar, John Rich. He's going to be playing a prominent role tonight, especially in the Open. I got a little bit of a preview, but I was told not to tell anyone. So if everyone listening promises not to tell anyone, John won't be mad at me. Singer-songwriter, Fox Nation host, one of the MVPs and great friends of the network. John, you should be welcoming me, but I'm going to welcome you to the show. Welcome me to your town.
I appreciate it. Welcome to the Grand Ole Opry. How about that? I mean, that's like the phrase everybody wants to hear in their life at some point.
Now, how long has this been here? Because I know it's 95 years old, but they told me it's a bunch of locations.
You're talking about the Grand Ole Opry itself? So, yeah, it started downtown in Nashville at the Ryman Auditorium, which is still there. People should go see that for sure. The mother church of country music.
They
still do Grand Ole Opry shows. The Grand Ole Opry is a radio show. So it started back, like you said, 95 years ago on AM 650, one of the biggest AM stations. And they started having basically these onstage jams at the Ryman Auditorium. Well, the Grand Ole Opry show got so big that they couldn't handle it downtown. So they built this building here, which you're at, the Grand Ole Opry. So, listen, this is where every country singer in the world, I don't care from Garth Brooks down to the guy who's parking cars right now trying to get a deal. Every country singer wants to sing on the Grand Ole Opry.
And in the middle of the stage is a circle.
Right.
And that is?
That circle was taken from the original Ryman Auditorium, which, like I said, is downtown. But that was the circle that everybody stood in to sing. So Minnie Pearl, Hank Sr., all the greats throughout history stood in that circle. So when you take the Opry stage, that old circle is still sitting there, and that's the magic spot.
It's amazing. Everyone still comes there today. The seats are also unique. There are benches like pews.
So the Ryman Auditorium was actually a big Methodist church back in the day, and the church allowed these guys to come in and do a Saturday night music jam called the Grand Ole Opry, and it has pews in it because it was a church. And so I think they kept that spirit alive by building the new Opry the same way.
So you've been there before. We were in Hollywood, Florida. How's tonight going to feel different, do you think?
You know, the Guitar Hotel in Hollywood, Florida, I mean, that place
that was cool.
It's unbelievable to be in there. This is a different vibe here because it's the Grand Ole Opry, you know, and I would dare say that most people that watch Fox or listen to you on the radio are probably country music fans. So for them to see some of their favorite people inside the Opry's best of both worlds.
So I was able to – they put us up in a hotel right by Broadway. Yeah. And I've been lucky enough to be here working and also came here a couple of times to have a good time. Your place, the Redneck Riviera, on the corner. Now, I know it's good for your business, but do you worry about it coming too commercial? In the beginning, you used to see country music fans. Now I'm just – I couldn't even walk down the street last night, and it was a Wednesday. Yeah. It was so crowded.
It's a madhouse.
I know you love this as a restaurateur and owner of a beautiful bar, right at the end, perfect location.
Yeah.
But do you see, look around sometimes and go, what happened to history? What happened to country music? Is it too commercial?
Well, the city of Nashville got rid of a lot of the history, which is unfortunate. Music Row doesn't look the same. A lot of the historic buildings got knocked
down. Broadway's Big Apple building now. It's all glass.
Right. But the actual main strip down on Broadway, those are the original honky-tonks. So, like where Redneck Riviera is, my bar is at 3rd and Broadway. That was actually a hospital during the Civil War. It was built in 1851. I mean, that's how
same
long.
Same building.
Same building. We had to go in and structurally, you know, bring it up to where we could hold a bunch of people. But it's the same brick, same location. Right. And people love coming to Redneck Riviera. When you walk in, my walls are absolutely plastered. There's thousands of patches from police, fire, veterans, active duty. They come in from all over the U.S. to put their patches on that wall. It's the only bar you'll see on Broadway that does that.
So cool. And I've been there before. And you did the extraordinary thing that has caught the imagination of America. When the President Freedom Fighter was out on paperback, you had a book signing in a country music bar, yours.
Yeah.
How do you think that that's going to catch on and Barnes & Noble at one point would just be out of business? It was great.
Well, you can do things at Redneck Riviera to book signing that you can't do at Barnes & Noble.
Drink
and dance and hear live music. I mean, I'd like to get my book signed at Redneck Riviera.
It was
for
so
sure.
Cool. And then you'd sit there playing?
Yeah, man. We enjoyed having you.
That was great. It just shows that you're creative, how creative you are. You have how much going on right now? Because you also have your liquor, right?
Yeah, Redneck Riviera Whiskey is now in over 10,000 stores across the U.S.
A portion goes to
we've generated $1.6 million back to the Folds of Honor since 2018. RedneckRiviera.com has a store locator. You can find the whiskey anywhere you got. I'm about to do 1,000 autographed bottles for Christmas, where you can order one and put it under the tree for your favorite redneck and your family. So that's done great. Old Glory Bank is up and running. That is a bank that it's Ben Carson, Larry Elder, myself, and a few others, where you will never be canceled for exercising your constitutional rights, because we see what's happening to a lot of prominent conservatives.
I did not know that. I know you talked about that.
It's up and running. Yeah, it's now graduated to the point we're actually doing small business loans now. So lots of people are coming to Old Glory Bank, oldglorybank.com.
How many outlets do you have?
Right now, on physical outlets, not that many, because it's online mainly, but those physical outlets will come. But what people like about it is, you know, you can't be Justin Trudeau'd with this bank. People think that if the government tells a bank to freeze somebody's bank account, the bank does not have to just do that. The bank can say, no, we're not freezing their account. They did not commit a crime. We're not doing it. Most banks just bend to the will of the government. Old Glory Bank's not going to do that. So because of that, lots of people are bringing their accounts to us.
Which is interesting, because what you're referring to is the truckers with in Canada.
Yeah.
They went and said since they wouldn't move, he went ahead and froze their bank accounts.
That's how he ultimately stopped the protest. He froze their bank accounts. He froze their boss's bank accounts. Tow trucks that refused to tow the trucks, he would freeze the tow truck company's bank account. I mean, Nigel Farage just had all his accounts frozen. We've seen all kinds of people do that. And that is the ultimate backbreaker if the U.S. government ever starts freezing the accounts of people that disagree with them. I mean, you talk about fascism, that's it. So we see this as a problem in the future and wanted to build Old Glory Bank to be a stopgap for that situation.
Can you give me an idea what you're doing at the Patriot Awards tonight without giving it away?
Yeah, so Pete Hegseth and I have a hilarious opening, okay? We shot this a couple of weeks ago. It involves classic Cadillacs, honky-tonks, and cowboy hats. And it's hilarious. And I'm just telling you right now, Pete, who knew Pete was that funny? But he's a funny guy, man. So the opening should be really hilarious.
That should be great. And talk about this. You've gone to so many award shows. I mean, CMAs, everything. This is different.
Yeah. This is the best award show because
you've been at every one, haven't you?
I've been to all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the best awards show, though, the Patriot Awards, because we're putting the spotlight on people who really should have the spotlight on them. I mean, who cares about a celebrity getting another platinum record, really? I mean, good for them, but so what? What about our fire police? What about the young patriots that are holding the line? What about all the people that really make the country great? So I'm always proud to be a part of this. I've been to every one of them, by the way. I have not missed one. This is my fifth one.
John Rich is with us. John. And I don't know the answer to this because you have so many fans, and The Apprentice, too, gave you more fans. But do you notice when people come up to you what they say, and you immediately know why they know you. For example, I was last night on Broadway, and people from Minnesota, people from Michigan, people from Ohio come up to you, and they want to be part of this. And not putting down New York and New Jersey, there's a different feeling when you go to them and Nashville, or you go to Minnesota, you see these people who feel as though Fox has been a voice for them. Mm-hmm. Even if they don't agree with everything we say, do you notice that when fans see you on the channel, they might approach you differently than when they just buy your music?
You know, I gave up. The music industry blackballed me. I then conversely blackballed them too. I don't want to deal with them either. The music industry in Nashville, it's Sony, Universal, Warner Brothers, all the same big companies that we know are running everything else that are completely woke. So stepped away from them, started making my own music. Fox has always given me a platform to be able to sing a new song, to show people what I'm doing, and talk about the country and what's important to me, my family, God, family, country. And so, yeah, when I run into people now at a Big and Rich show, wherever, they'll come up to me and say, man, right, love your music and thank you for what you say and what you stand for.
So look at, I mean, look at this, for example, in FGL. I mean, Brian Kelly is putting out really good music, and Tyler Hubbard is putting out really good music. But we're only hearing Tyler Hubbard.
That's correct.
We're not hearing Brian Kelly.
No.
And I'm listening, and I thought to myself, you know, sometimes there's more talented Simon and Garfunkel. Obviously, Paul Simon, much more talented. Got it. Understood. That's okay. I'm listening to Brian Kelly stuff. It sounds like FGL. It sounds him, a little bit more like him.
Yeah.
I'm just a consumer. I'm not an expert. There's no way he shouldn't be played
of
on
course.
All the top. What's going on here? He tends to be, I'm just going to put words in his mouth, by the conversations I've had, he tends to be more conservative than they tell me Tyler is.
Right.
Does that have anything to do with it?
100% it does. So all the record labels are owned by these big companies, and all the country radio stations are owned by only about three different companies. You know this. You're a radio guy. The conglomerates own everything. So when they have their little meeting in the back room and decide somebody's done, they're done. Now then it's on to the artist to figure out another way to get to the people and get their music out there and have it be heard. That's what I've done. You guys have been a great asset to me, a great friendship with me to do that. Listen, my last four songs all set at the top of the iTunes download chart for multiple weeks. I mean, higher than Beyonce.
They debuted
and higher
on
than
our
bunch
channel.
Of people. I'm just saying, man. I mean, the people are out there. If I write music that really turns them on, it gives them something they love, and I'm allowed to expose it, for instance, on Fox, people then know the music is there, and it doesn't matter if country radio is playing it or not.
I also think it's kind of interesting, too, is because I don't think they talk, and I think it's over politics. It's not over, you know, it used to be over girls or the
right.
work ethic or I drink too much, I do
yeah.
work too much, and now I think it's over politics. And, they, you know, FGL was one of the hottest hottest duos ever, you know, in modern
yeah.
country music. And now they've gone their separate ways, and there's fundamentally the only thing different is who they voted for.
Well,
this is crazy.
Me and Big Kenny don't agree on a lot of things. Big and Rich.
So you never bring it up.
We do agree on a lot of things, but then we totally disagree on a lot of things. No, we'll bring it up and talk about it every now and then and go into a subject or whatever, but then we high five, go on the stage, rock and roll, and go home. You know, because our friendship overrides the disagreements. You know, Americans used to be able to disagree without hating each other. We're not at that point anymore.
Right.
You know, even back in the Greatest Generation, World War II, they disagreed on everything. They did all the way back to the founding of the country. They were having pistol fights out in the yard over the Constitution and things like that. We've always disagreed, but it's only been recently that we haven't been able to get over the disagreement enough to still have each other's back if it came down to that.
So interesting that 2 days ago, Mark Wayne Mullen, Senator Mullen of Oklahoma, was going to go out with the Teamster chief. You have
they should set that up, man. It should be for charity and turn him loose in the octagon.
Because he was tweeting at him, challenging
yeah.
him. He said, now that we're here, let's do this. He goes, let's do this.
Right.
At the same time, you have the other threats from Comer and Congressman Moskowitz saying the making up things about Comer, setting up offshore accounts that didn't happen, accusing him of giving his brother a loan for a farm. He said, why is that? And he just making things up instead of examining the Hunter Biden situation. It's just a screaming match.
Right.
And then it becomes personal. One person called the other one a smurf and whatever. I mean, this
right.
happened in one day.
Yeah.
And then there was another incident. Then 2 weeks ago, within the party, you have one of the problem solvers from Caucus call out a congressman from New York because they did not agree on condemning Israel. He's like, what about these guys? How could you not condemn Hamas for their attacks on Israel?
Democrats fighting Democrats, but it's gotten physical instead of verbal. And we used to do that, though.
Well, that's indicative of the temperature of the country right now. It's the same way out in the public. That's why it's unnerving. I think we're all watching what's going on in our towns, even here in Nashville. You know, I was driving to go pick my boys up from school, and I drove past 300 people right there in Nashville waving the Palestinian flag, screaming all kinds of stuff. A couple of them had the Hamas stuff up, and I went, wow, man, right in the middle of Nashville. And everybody's watching that in their towns, and it is highly unnerving right now.
Yeah.
Don't you agree? I mean, I can't imagine being in New York City.
More than agree. New York City's even crazier. It's even crazier. I felt great with the 300,000 in Washington, D.C., Tuesday. That was unbelievable. Well, guess what? No violence, no damage, nothing.
Right.
In, out, that's all. But now it's back, and these people need to be exposed. Imagine if people were actually demonstrating for Al-Qaeda after 9/11. Or even you heard whispers of it. People assume, no, I have nothing to do with it. Okay, that's fine. Well, let's hear it. Now we have people with Hamas signs who say we will never stop cutting up Jews.
Yeah. Do you remember the stories back, what you're talking about Al-Qaeda? Remember a few of the girls in America that had been basically pen pals with some Al-Qaeda guys and agreed to marry them and go overseas and marry them? And we found them, and they all got arrested. They all got arrested.
Good memory.
They arrested all of them. They're probably still in jail for aiding and abetting terrorists.
Wow.
Okay, so what's changed from then till now?
Nothing. A couple more minutes with John Rich when we come back. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee, the site of the Patriot Awards tonight. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I want my Republican colleagues to give me one thing, one, that I can go campaign on and say we did. One. Anybody sitting in the complex, if you want to come down to the floor and come explain to me one material, meaningful, significant thing the Republican majority has done besides, well, I guess it's not as bad as the Democrats.
Well, that was Chip Roy upset with the continuing resolution that was signed over two phases by the brand new speaker. They got rid of the old speaker and then made totally embarrass themselves for 22 straight days. John Rich, I know how passionate you are about politics, but you have like nine other jobs. You can't sit there on like me and follow everything.
Yeah.
Were you just stunned by those series of events and then hear the Republicans have one small fraction of power, how they seem to be turning on each other so often?
I would say it was stunning to watch it because we've never seen it before. On the other side of that coin, listen, and you and I may disagree on this, which is fine, but a lot of us were really sick and tired of watching people get elected and go sit in these seats and never do anything that they say they're going to do. I mean, McCarthy said you're going to see all the J6 tapes. He told us that straight up, and I went, I was shocked that he said that. I went, well, right on. If he's going to do that, okay, let's go, Kevin, let's go. And he didn't. And there was other things he said he was going to do, but he didn't do it. We still don't have them. And I don't know that the new speaker will either. I don't know what Rogers is going to do either. But listen, the American people are sick and tired of being told by politicians, we're going to do this if you'll just elect us. And then they get elected and then they don't do it.
But a couple of things. I would make an analogy. You got to, hey, John, give me five songs by the end. If you had to deal with a big band and they were disagreeing on different things, it's not the John Rich band, it's a big band, and you had to get this together, and they're working or they're not showing up, and it's not done, you have to come up to me and say, Brian Kilmeade, I know I promised you five songs, but my guys aren't ready. They're going to need an extension as opposed to we're not delivering.
I guess, I mean, I would consider that a strange analogy for me.
Because Republicans were not delivering from their committees.
Brian, there are men rotting in jail cells in Washington, D.C. with no habeas corpus. Forget excessive bail, no bail. We've seen the footage we have seen that's come out. Exonerated two or three.
I was talking about the budget.
Yeah, define the budget, whatever. Yes, of course, that's important. But the thing I focused on was when he said, we're going to turn loose of all this footage. Let's see if these guys are really guilty of what they're being incarcerated for or not. I mean, when you see Americans jailed and rotting in jail cells with no bail, no habeas corpus, no speedy trial, none of the things that were guaranteed in the Constitution, what does that sound like to you? It sounds like the USSA. It does not sound like America that that's even happening.
Right.
And so when Kevin McCarthy said, I get in there, I'm releasing all the footage, the chips will fall where they're going to fall, and he never did it. That infuriated a lot of us.
I wonder how much is left, though.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Normally, I say I'm from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. It's so automatic, and I am. But today, we've taken the show on the road for a great reason. The Patriot Awards, the guy with the deep voice just confirmed it. We're behind the theater. And I'm talking about the Grand Ole Opry House. And this has been around for 95 years. You look around these halls, it's like a museum. It's as if you're a football fan. The analogy would be walking through Canton, baseball through Cooperstown. And then to see Trace Atkins as well as these other country music stars walking through. And they're in awe of what they're seeing right now. So it's going to be a great day. It's an all-American day. I'm walking around town in Broadway, and you see firefighters, you see police officers, military veterans, and they come up, and I'm thinking they're on vacation, and instead they say, we're here for the Patriot Awards. And that, to me, is the ultimate sacrifice. You know, a lot of people get excited if somebody famous knows you. That may be when I first got the job, but that has left a long time ago. When I find out that firefighters say, hey, we watch you in the firehouse, or you guys watched our back, and with the police, we really appreciate you. One of the few people that support us. That, to me, is the ultimate compliment. And by the way, sadly, it's 100% true. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This is a place where I do a little bedwetting. When I'm sitting up at night, this is the thing I worry about. If Joe Manchin decides he wants to run on a third-party ticket, that could elect Donald Trump. And we need to be very clear about some of these third-party candidacies.
There's a lot going. Cornel West, elect Donald Trump. Jill Stein, elect Donald Trump. RFK Jr., elect Donald Trump. Joe Manchin, Governor Huntsman, Governor Hogan, they could elect Donald Trump or not. Or they could get elected themselves if Donald Trump's so bad. If Donald Trump is so bad and so unelectable, why does he keep winning? We just got new polls in. Third major poll. This one, Fox. Trump has beaten Biden everywhere.
Number two.
There is an AK-47. There are cartridges, ammo. There are grenades in here. Of course, uniforms. And all of that. This was hidden very conveniently, secretly, behind the MRI machine.
Amazing. That is an IDF spokesperson talking about what's happening in this hospital where they found nothing but weapons, maps, plans to attack. What hospital has that stuff? Does that give you enough proof, you protesters around this country and in the UK and around the other Western cultures, that this is not about Israel callously blowing up a hospital? It's about them eradicating Hamas, who hides there.
Number one.
As you know, I just concluded several hours of meetings with President Xi, and I believe they were some of the most constructive and productive discussions we've had. We've made some important progress, I believe.
Yeah, I believe. Let's say superpower thaw, perhaps. China comes to the city by the bay and shows a willingness to talk, a stubbornness on Taiwan, all while never taking the blame for the spy balloon or the global pandemic that killed millions. We're not bringing it up. I understand big picture. You know, you got to say to yourself, do I really want to fight here? Is this the place I want to fight? Or should I wait? See if I get some deliverables and get myself reelected. I think China wants him reelected. Why wouldn't they? So if I was to look at what's happening so far, this is what they tell us happened. They've agreed to curb fentanyl production and to start military-to-military communications. Both American and Chinese accounts, their first encounter was first encounter in 6 years. They both say there was little progress on other issues. They both essentially will say we're two superpowers who agree not to disagree. Let's bring in Mark Thiessen. Mark Thiessen, a former speechwriter, Washington Post columnist, Fox News contributor. Early on, the meeting's over. Mark, how did President Biden do?
Well, first of all, the whole thing was a PR disaster for the United States. I mean, why on earth
would you host the APEC summit and particularly a bilateral summit with the Chinese president in San Francisco, which is a city that is so riddled with crime and drugs that it can that literally people have to walk in the middle of the street in order to avoid the homeless people shooting up and all the needles, and then ape the Chinese Communist Party by turning it into a Potemkin village for the occasion and cleaning it all up. And the Chinese are laughing at us because they're providing all the precursors for the fentanyl that's killing all the people that everybody's shooting up on the streets of San Francisco. They're using this in their media as a propaganda push to say, look, this is what democracy gives you. This is why democracy is inferior. We don't have homeless people shooting up on the streets of Beijing. We don't have homeless people shooting up on the streets of Shanghai. This is the decadent West, the incompetent West, and our system is superior. And all the while, they're feeding us the fentanyl for this propaganda victory. It's just absolutely the most stunning. I mean, you know, this administration is so incompetent that, you know, it's hard to top itself. But I think this tops a lot of it.
And number one, there's no way to possibly follow up and verify that they're going to stop doing it, let alone there's some talk that they're going to, just rudimentary saying this, that we're going to agree to not put AI in our nuclear weapons. And people in the tech center say that's an epic disaster because that's one advantage we have, absolutely necessary, and you can make an argument makes everything safer. And why would they care so much about that? Is this their version of Star Wars? We got to stop them from going to the sky because we're running out of money? I'm not sure, but I hope we don't give in. What is your greatest fear, Mark, about this?
Well, first of all, has Russia agreed not to put AI on its nuclear weapons? I mean, you know, why would we be concluding unilaterally conceding something that Russia won't agree to, even if it was a good idea? You know, why would you do that? But of course, we're the world leader in AI. I certainly would want to have AI. I wouldn't want to put AI in charge of the button. You know, I don't want to relive war games. You know, the Matthew Broderick thing. I'd rather have the AI playing tic tac toe. But I certainly would like to use AI to target and to have accuracy. And this is what the left always does. Anytime America has a strategic advantage in anything, they want to give it up for the sake of peace. It's like, you know, as soon as we develop nuclear weapons and achieve strategic weapons parity with the Soviet Union during the Cold War, the nuclear freeze movement started. As soon as we became an energy superpower and became energy independent, they want to give up fossil fuels. And now, you know, now we're becoming a world leader in AI, and they want to give that up too. It's like no matter what America, you know, they hate the West. They want to teach all of our kids that the West is evil. But the West produces the best technology in the world. We have the best at that, and so they want to teach us teach our kids that the West is evil and give up any advantages that we have from free enterprise and free markets.
This is a little from Joe Biden yesterday in the translated speech. In fact, rather than that, let's use the translation of the president of China. Here's what he said about our relationship. Cut 9.
The China-U.S. relationship, which is the most important bilateral relationship in the world, should be perceived and envisioned in a broad context of the accelerating global transformations unseen in a century. It should develop in a way that benefits our two peoples and fulfills our responsibility for human progress.
Feel better?
Oh, much better. Yes, I feel good. No, we don't have to worry about any of this. It's all good. No problems. I mean, look, here's the world we're living in right now, Brian. America is projecting weakness in the world. What has that weakness given us? It's given us a Russian invasion of Ukraine, and Iran has started a war in the Middle East, and that's who it is. You know, Hamas is just a proxy, and China is rattling its saber and threatening to start a war in the Pacific. I mean, this is deadly serious stuff. We're on the brink of World War III. And if you think that we're going to have wars on three continents and America can just sit behind its Fortress America and not not get involved, we're going to get dragged into this. You know, you look at what's happening in the Middle East right now, and the Iranians are shooting over 50 times at U.S. Ships, at U.S. bases. They've given concussions and traumatic brain injury to a bunch of troops, but nobody's died yet. At some point, an American's going to get killed. And then what happens? Then we have to respond. I mean, the best way to get to, if you don't want to go to war, the best way to do it is to deter war. And the best way to deter war is to help your allies defeat your enemies and send a message of strength. And she is looking at the world, and he sees a weak America that is afraid of its own shadow, that doesn't want to, that is afraid of terrified of escalation. And he calculates, they're not going to defend Taiwan.
I want you to hear how Nikki Haley would handle it. This is what she said yesterday, Cut 12.
I would ask him why he's putting a military base off our shores in Cuba. I would ask him why he continues to murder Americans by sending over fentanyl. I'd ask him why he's stealing our intellectual property and not owning up to it. I would ask him why he's buying so much U.S. soil and it's next to military installations. What they're going to come out is an agreement on the environment.
So do you like that approach? And they are agreeing to stop to begin looking for renewables. So they are agreeing to that. Your thoughts on what you would say?
Well, first of all, I would feel I'd sleep better at night if Nikki Haley was sitting across from Xi Jinping rather than Joe Biden. And I think all of America should. I mean, she understands that we have to project strength in the world. I'd probably sleep better at night if I thought that Nikki Haley was going to be opposing Joe Biden in the next election, because I think we'd have a better chance of winning and having that scenario come out. But the Chinese are, why on earth, you've got John Kerry sitting across the table in that meeting. John Kerry doesn't care about the Uyghurs, doesn't care about Taiwan, doesn't care about anything. He just cares about climate. And he would give up all of that in order to get China to reduce its emissions. And so they look at this stuff and they say, we can play these guys. We'll just we'll make some concessions down the line on climate, and they'll stop bothering us about stealing their intellectual property. They'll stop bothering us about the Uyghurs. They'll stop bothering us about Hong Kong. They won't stop us in Taiwan because we'll just give them something on the climate, because the climate is what they really care about.
I only got a minute, but real quick on the Fox News poll, 20% of Americans blame Israel for the conflict with Hamas, which is encouraging. 69% blame Hamas. No kidding. In the Middle East conflict, you side more with Israel or the Palestinians, 66% with Israel. Fox News poll, when it comes to Israel in the United States, should 30% say too supportive, 21% say not supportive enough, 45% say about right. So we're okay on that. When it comes to the president's personal reelection hopes, he has 63% disapproval with men, 57% disapproval with college degrees, 41% disapproval of him of black voters, 60% of Hispanic voters disapprove. He's got 39% overall approval rating. Head-to-head with Trump, he loses by 5. With DeSantis, he loses – no, with Trump by 4, with DeSantis by 5, Nikki Haley beats him, Biden by 11. If you were Joe Biden – in Joe Biden's camp right now, would you be worried?
I would be deeply worried. But first of all, I want to see the Fox News poll on Brian Kilmeade wearing cowboy hats. That's the poll I want to see.
Allison? Do you have that in? Oh, we're still working on it.
Well, let's get that, because
we do not have.
Particularly, I loved how uncomfortable you looked with it on. That made my morning.
Because I know I don't deserve it. I mean, I don't have cattle. I don't really ride a horse.
You're an urban.
And I feel like I don't want to feel like a fraud. But go ahead.
First of all, you're dealing with more danger in the New York subway than you would be on the prairies of Texas.
Thank
anyway.
You.
But look here on the polls. If you look at that New York Times Siena poll. Right. It shows Trump winning narrowly winning in most of the swing states. But if you if you remove either one of those candidates, the other side wins overwhelmingly. So if the Democrats take Biden off of the ballot, they crush Trump. in all of those swing states. And by contrast, if Nikki Haley is the candidate for the Republicans going up against Biden, she crushes Biden in those states. The American people have said pretty strongly, we don't want either of these guys to be the nominees. We do not want a rematch. And so I just look at the numbers showing Nikki Haley crushing Biden by 11 points. Why would we not want to go into the election, which is if Republicans don't win this election,
I've never seen anything like
I mean, we're never coming back. The damage
just,
that
just so you feel better. No, I know. And he's not guys, everyone listening, he's not overstating it. So head to head in the Fox News poll, Kamala Harris or Trump? Trump by 5. Gavin Newsom or Trump? Trump by 4. Whitmer or Trump? It is Trump by 2. Manchin and Trump, it's only Trump by 1. So that's as of November 10th, the Fox News poll.
Yeah. So I think, quite frankly, I think Joe Manchin's going to run as a third-party ticket, and that's going to – and that's going to – I think there's going to be a no – if they, if these two are the candidates, there's going to be no labels.
Who gets hurt? Who gets hurt if Manchin runs?
I think this is a unique moment when both sides could get hurt by that. I think that normally third parties don't have any chance, but if you're one of the 70 or 80% of Americans who don't want a Trump Biden rematch, if you're a Democrat, you're never going to vote for Trump. If you're a Republican, you're never going to vote for Joe Biden. You have no safe harbor, and so you're stuck with this choice you don't want to make. And all of a sudden, somebody comes and shows you a safe harbor. I think it just from an analytical perspective, whether you agree with it or not, I think that a centrist bipartisan ticket, if they're serious candidates, like two United States senators, two governors or something like that, it could, you know, you could get lightning in a bottle.
Gotcha. Hey, Mark Thiessen, always great. Thanks so much for judging me this morning on my looks. I think we need more of
now
that.
You just got to get the boots.
And what I'm wearing.
Pick up the boots too.
Right. Right, to be totally unacceptable and inauthentic. But I love being in Nashville. I like watching. I don't need to dress up like I live here unless I decide to
Rome,
live here, which would be
when in Rome, do like the Romans do, my friend.
Yes. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, thanks so much, everyone, to put Teddy and Booker T opens up number 9 in the country on the New York Times list. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Two American Icons Blaze the Path to Racial Equality. The special's on Fox Nation. Hope you check it out. Went to the places, shot it over a year. It's really good. I think we need to hear positive American stories, especially as it relates to race. In America, at a very difficult time, but I do hope to see you guys in person. And I'm going to be in Brentwood, Tennessee tomorrow at 3. I'm going to be in Chattanooga, Tennessee the 18th, the next day in Alabama, or Chattanooga, Tennessee on the 18th. Then I'm going to Madison, Alabama later on the afternoon at 6. Then the next day, Montgomery, Alabama, and then you'll see me in Bayshore. What I also try to do is hop on stage and tell everyone what's going on with all my books. Now that we have Teddy and Booker T out, it was preceded by the President Freedom Fighter. And there, I'll be on the 15th of December in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Go check it out at BrianKilmeade.com. Carnegie of Homestead Music Hall on the 16th, the next night, in Holland, Michigan at 8 o'clock. So I hope to see everybody there. My last stop this year will be in Wichita, Kansas. You're listening to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Last time we met in Bali, you said it was a year and a day ago. A lot has happened since then. The world has emerged from the COVID pandemic, but is still under its tremendous impacts. The global economy is recovering, but its momentum remains sluggish. Industrial and supply chains are still under the threat of interruption, and protectionism is rising. All these are grave problems.
for you. And can you believe that the president who gave the world a pandemic that changed the world and killed millions of people and brought economies to its knees, even theirs, has the audacity to bring it up in a statement with the president of the United States, who does not or chooses not or does not have the guts to actually say, wait a second, you gave us that pandemic. It came from the lab. It came from a bat. It came from a bat. Came from a bat in a lab. Whatever. You gave it to us. You thrust it on the world and you act as if you were just victims of it. And you mocked us because you did not like our response. And next thing you know, your response was horrendous. The crackdowns were unbelievably oppressive and otherworldly. And your economy has not come back. But they still, to bring it up is absolutely insane. For Mike Gallagher, who has spent the bulk of his life, by the way, the bulk of his life in the majority as chairman of the Select Committee on China, said this about any deals that we make over the next 2 days in San Francisco. Cut 13.
For 2 years now, the administration has completely taken its foot off the gas. They have not sanctioned any Chinese officials. They attempted to downplay, if not cover up, the spy balloon incident. There has been no meaningful investigation into the origins of COVID. Also, that we could send cabinet secretaries to China to beg the CCP to have this meeting. That is the price we've already paid. That is the win that Xi Jinping has already pocketed. And now I worry that coming out of this meeting, there will be some commitment to working together on fentanyl. But like every other commitment that the CCP has made in modern history, the Chinese Communist Party will violate that commitment. Time and again, we fall victim to this trap whereby we pay cash up front and the CCP's check is always in the mail.
That is Mike Gallagher, just outraged by there's no precursors to this meeting and what comes out of it since. Gianna Caldwell joins us now, Fox News contributor, author. Gianna, welcome back.
Thank you for having me. So good to be here in Nashville with you.
I know. I mean, does it bother you at all that they showed the world, did Gavin Newsom, that you can clean up a major city if you choose, if the right reason, if the right company is coming? And they did it. They cleaned it up. They bust the homeless out. And they fixed it. There's no illegal immigrants around.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice to see that if I still lived there during that time? I left California in May 2020 for Florida for some of the reasons in which you just mentioned. The homeless population there is almost 160,000, if not more.
Wow.
So you got that's the
mostly mentally ill,
time.
Right?
I mean, there's a lot of that. And I got to tell you, during COVID, I went down to Skid Row with a camera crew and a 6-foot mic. And I had conversations with them about, you know, what they were doing there. What did they know about COVID? And some of those folks are clearly mentally ill. Some are choosing to be on the streets because they don't want to follow rules of a shelter. And then other people have economic factors to blame on their reasoning for being there. But the fact that you got people like Gavin Newsom who can't clean up the state of Florida. I mean, not Florida, but California and Los Angeles and all these other places within the state of California, the fact that he won't do it tells you all that you need to know about where those tax dollars are going.
How about the fact that in praising Gavin Newsom, the president of the United States says he could do my job? He basically saying you could take my job right now, and he does such a great job as governor. Number one, he isn't. doing a great job. Right. Number two is you're telling somebody who everyone's telling you is going to run for president to basically you can do the job. It's crazy. Do you think Trump would ever say this Ron DeSantis, he could be president?
No, he would never say it. And I'm sure Gavin Newsom is saying, you're right. That's why I'm making all these steps, meeting with the president of China and doing all these trips. Like, he's going to debate Ron DeSantis Hannity.
I know.
Like, that sounds like a presidential debate, doesn't it?
It's going to be great.
I mean, it's going to be great, but I'm wondering, what is he waiting on? Why don't you just announce you're running for president? Why don't you just make this a real competition? Why don't you put yourself out there?
You know,
are you waiting for something to happen to Joe Biden health-wise?
Evidently, that party likes to pick their people. Remember, Hillary Clinton was getting a threat. They basically rigged the game. We know about all the questions given. And then Bernie Sanders emerges the last election. They go, no, it's going to be Joe Biden.
Right.
Remember, and SNL was mocking Joe Biden. We're using Jason Sudeikis. Couldn't find himself, got confused. Then all of a sudden he becomes a nominee, And even the comedian shows start pretending as if he's competent.
Exactly. So you see how much the media, even the comics, are in the bag with the Democratic Party. And at the end of the day, especially if it seemed as though there was going to be a lot of folks talking trash about Joe Biden, then they would get punished way, shape, or form.
We've seen Tulsi Gabbard got punished when she went after Hillary Clinton.
She absolutely did, and thank God she's now working for us now, because she was a truth teller that the Democrats could not handle. And that's the problem with the politics of the day. So many people willing to lie for Joe Biden, pretend that the economy is great and Bidenomics is working, when you got working families who can barely survive. They can barely pay for medicine and groceries because the prices have gone up, let alone gas and some of these other necessities that people need, families need, that are raising kids. It's a chaos problem for the Democratic Party, and the migrant situation is making it worse, especially for black voters in places like Chicago, New York, and other places that are Democratic strongholds. People are really fed up with what's going on.
Right. And you know what's interesting? This guy, Dean Phillips, who's a self-made multimillionaire, says, I'm going to run. And he wanted to call Biden. Biden would not call him back. And people are saying the thing that when they talk to him that's scaring them, he thinks he can win. And he wants to win, as opposed to Dennis Kucinich or those guys who are just looked at as fringe candidates. He says allies have been treating presidential nomination Dean Phillips like a nobody or worse. But here's the thing. He doesn't need their money. He will go out and campaign, and he will be in New Hampshire. And yesterday, New Hampshire said, we're going to be first, not South Carolina.
That's right.
I don't care what you want. No. We're going first. So Dean Phillips will be the only nominee. He'll walk out. He's going to get all those electoral votes.
Yeah, he's going to get a win. And we don't know what Joe Manchin is doing yet. And there's a lot of other folks, contenders, who would definitely take some of that Joe Biden base away if he has any left. And we're talking about working class folks. Now, some interesting polling came out in May from Fox News Channel about Joe Biden. Traits of Joe Biden: cares about people like me. Only 45% yes. Is honest and trustworthy. Only 40% said yes. Has judgment to serve. 38% said yes. Has mental soundness to serve. 37% is a strong leader. 33% is corrupt. 44%. These numbers have gotten worse. That was in May.
Right.
And now we have legitimately a war in the Middle East. The Ukraine issue is still an issue. You got fentanyl coming across the border, impacting families left and right. For the first time in American history, we got 100,000 people who have overdosed and died from the use of a drug.
Right.
People are in chaos with what's going on in this country. And the fact that folks are still trying to pile on, Democratic Party are still trying to ensure that Joe Biden wins, it's death to the Democratic Party, especially when you think about the black voters who are running away from him.
That's so interesting, because he's got 45% negatives on black voters when he got 77 or 87% of the black vote last time around.
It was 92% in 22.
So right now,
in 20, I should
say, it looks like Trump's up to 22%.
22% in six battleground states. And the polling said if the election was held today, black voters would only 66% of black voters would only vote for Joe Biden, which is the end of his candidacy.
Right.
Like, if you don't have black voters, you can't win. It was the same for the primary.
Do you think Trump realizes that? Because he doesn't seem to have a strategy for urban America.
So I can't tell you what is going on in his campaign today from that perspective. But in 2020, he had the platinum plan. In 2016, he was running to Donald Trump's credit. And I'm going to tell you, I know what they've said about Donald Trump. And I know he doesn't always say the right thing, but there's not been a president that has been more supportive of black America, Democrat or Republican, than Donald Trump, period. And that's me saying I'm from the south side of Chicago.
Right.
I'm just telling you what the numbers are and what I've seen him do. Now, they will go after every black vote that they can find.
They're going to make him the grand wizard, and they're going to make him Hitler. They're
going to say that about. But the thing is, like, and this is what really upsets me, Brian. I've heard Joe Biden, because I've heard friends back when Trump was running in 2020. Friends call me, are you going to say anything about what Trump just said? What about the black community? Are you going to speak up? Are you going to do this, that, and the other? Joe Biden says ridiculous things, and I would even argue racist things regularly. And I call these same people, and I say, well, are you going to say anything about what Joe Biden is saying? Nope. Right. So what I come to learn is all BS politics. And the Democratic Party will use every race angle they can, especially as we get closer to the election. They see what these numbers are. They're gonna run the Charlottesville tape and everything else they can. And, you know, that's generally what they do. It doesn't matter if it was Donald Trump or Brian Kilmeade running for president. This is what they do. If you have a Republican, that's it.
I want you to hear what Jim Messina said, Democratic strategist, Cut 41.
This is a place where I do a little bedwetting. When I'm sitting up at night, this is the thing I worry about. If Joe Manchin decides he wants to run on a third-party ticket, that could elect Donald Trump. And we need to be very clear about some of these third-party candidacies. I think RFK Jr. is different. I think he's speaking at CPAC. He's talking about MAGA stuff. I think in the end he takes votes away from Trump, not Biden. But I think a third party with a Democrat on it could be difficult, and that's why I've been so critical of these stupid efforts. You know, when people want to play around with American politics, we could actually get rid of democracy in the middle of this. So I think we need to be very careful.
Wait a second. So what he's saying is if Joe Manchin runs, it hurts democracy. It's a reckless.
Really?
Because he wants to run. And this no labels has got on 50 states, it looks like. They got a lot of credible people involved with it, so-called moderates. Yeah. You might not like it, but to think it's going to endanger democracy, what are you talking
Meanwhile,
about?
Meanwhile, if you think Kennedy's going to take votes away from Trump, is A-okay.
Yeah, right. You know, that's okay.
I mean, talking out of both sides of his mouth. And I got to tell you, Brian, despite Joe Manchin possibly running, which I do think would hurt Joe Biden, and he has every reason to run against Joe Biden because Joe Biden hurt him after lying to him, saying that he was going to support him in the energy sector, and he absolutely did not. Beyond that, Joe Biden's in trouble, just him running against Donald Trump. He's on a sinking ship, and Democrats recognize that. They're whispering in D.C. They're telling us.
Right.
Like, yeah, we think this thing is on a
ship
going
to hell. Well, and they're shouting it.
Now because they want to try to replace him. But, you know, Joe Biden is under investigation right now by the House Committee. We got this impeachment inquiry going on. There's stuff in the DOJ that we didn't know about. And more continues to come out bit after bit. And the only way that he can actually be prosecuted, if he were to be prosecuted for any of this, would be out of office.
Right.
According to that DOJ memo. So he's not going anywhere. He's going to try to run these additional 4 years. If he's in a wheelchair, he's going to still do it. And that's just what it is. He's hungry for power, and he wants to shield and protect his family. And being in the White House is the only way he can do that.
And, you know, the polls are pretty terrible for him. Again, this is the third one. Fox is just the third one to go in. Record high disapproval, 63% disapprove. Men disapprove, 60% of Hispanics disapprove, 57% with college degrees, 41% of black voters disapprove. We also know that when the question was posed, choice for president if voting right now, Donald Trump beats Joe Biden by 50-46. DeSantis beats him 50-45.
No.
So Nikki Haley beats him by 11. Now, do you think, Gianno Caldwell, that the primary race is over? That even though we hadn't had a primary, even a caucus, do you think it's Trump's? You believe these polls?
I believe these polls. I've spoken with many voters. And I'll tell you, absent something health-wise going on with Donald Trump, he's going to win these primaries. I mean, it's just he will be the nominee. Now, I would encourage people like Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley to stay in a race because you just never know what could happen.
Because of the court cases.
Well, it's the court cases and there's a lot of other things. Like, it's just so many different ingredients in the pot. We don't know what's the end result going to be. The ramifications of not just the court cases, what's going on in our country, the wars, will
crime.
America get pulled into the war? Like, it's just so much. It's almost like being under a pressure cooker, and the result is going to just burst into 1,000 pieces. We don't know which piece is going to be the right piece, but we're going to continue to follow this as closely as possible.
Gianno, how people follow you? How do people on social media? Where
Thank
do we
you.
Find you?
Gianno Caldwell, at Gianno Caldwell, G-I-A-N-N-O, Caldwell, C-A-L-D-W-E-L-L.
What do you expect at the Patriot Awards tonight?
Well, I'm excited about it. Maybe I'll pick up a date. I don't know.
You and Lawrence are like the two single guys?
Yeah, we're the only two single guys. I wish I would have got married earlier. I could have did what you did and had kids already, but now I'm 36.
Are you 36?
I'm 36.
You look 26.
Well,
so that helps.
You.
There's no stress in your life.
You got to mention the muscles too, Brian.
Right. I did not notice that.
Chisel.
I have not had it. Let me feel
you. There you go.
Pretty ripped.
Well,
pretty
there
ripped.
We go.
Pretty
there we
strong.
Go. So, ladies, you heard it here first.
Now, is this the RFK testosterone replacement,
right.
or is this just you?
No, this is natural. This
All
is
right.
natural. I gotta get in the gym here and there.
All right,
but
good.
But I'll tell you, though, I'm excited about seeing many of our colleagues that have come out to support the real heroes, the veterans, the law enforcement, who do the very dangerous jobs and honestly gets tossed on every day for doing it. But
Not tonight.
Not tonight. We're going to celebrate them. We're going to lift them up. And I'm very thankful as a last note for the many fans that I've seen here and supporters and viewers who've prayed for me, who've spoken to me about my brother who was tragically murdered in Chicago last year, June 24th. Thank you all who are here and those who are listening. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, and we'll see from you, hear from you tonight.
Absolutely.
All right, great. Gianno Caldwell, thanks so much. Back in a moment, Brian Kilmeade Show in Nashville, Tennessee.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. I have a few minutes to fill. I have nothing to say at all. And I'm sitting there going, what am I going to do? I could sit here and just hum again. A lot of times that doesn't result in ratings. And finally, I said, I'll book anybody at all. And then Allison says, I have bad news. All I see is Jimmy Fallon. And I go, Allison, keep looking. There's got to be somebody else out there. And she came back. This is all I got. So, Jimmy Fallon, welcome to the show.
Good to see you. Right? You can't lower my self-esteem any more than it already is.
Really?
You know why?
Wait a second. You have to command an audience, a nationwide audience.
I open the show tonight here at the Patriot Awards, and I'll handle, like, that's my natural habitat. Stand up for me is easy.
Right.
But, like, walking around in this environment, you really figure out where you stand on this network based on reactions. Like,
in what way?
I walked in the lobby yesterday. People see you. They're like, oh, my God, Brian, kill me. People see me. They're like, hey, you got change of a 20? Hey, Jimmy, could you stay in my car for a minute? I'm just running upstairs to get something.
Well, this carjacking is an issue.
It is an issue. So. Well, Nash Vegas, where we are, is a little bit better than most. But, yeah, it's going to be down here. And thanks for letting me on. I'm using air quotes because we had to demand this.
You're about to do your show. You realize that, right? You have to do your show.
Yeah, but this is the nice thing because people just said, well, you're about, you know, your show's about to go live. Are you sure you have time to do Brian's? I'm like, dude, we don't prep my show. Right. Like, I have all the time in the world. What are you talking about? I could have co-hosted. I didn't need any time this morning. I'll be here, but we're ready. These are my notes.
So listen, we're going to watch you on Fox Nation. Yep. You're going to give how many minutes? 15 minutes?
15 minutes, and the world will never be the same.
And is it going to be an uplifting?
No. We're going to have a State of the Union. The world's on fire. I'm going to roast some marshmallows.
All right, so Pete Hegseth is going to have to grab the audience.
Wish him luck.
Jimmy Fallon, thanks so much. Best of luck with your show. Stay within yourself. That's all I ask. Bye.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.